Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Red Eyes Radio, an independent radio program fighting against idiocy and degeneracy alike, including cultural Marxism and the attack on our culture and people. I'm Henrik, and today we are going to give some focus to the Zika virus, the outbreak, and put this in context with the other previous viruses and diseases that was supposedly to take us all down with it, but obviously didn't. The pharmaceutical lobby, the vaccine industry, with the backing of the corrupt CDC, have been quick to jump on this opportunity, as they always do, to try to convince us that this old known virus is currently the most dangerous, deadly thing that we should worry about at this moment. Our guests is John Rappaport, Sherry Tenpenny, and Andreas Bachmeier. And later in the second hour, we will go into details in regards to the solution that they offer us, as they always do, a vaccine, and why you should not take the vaccine before, at the very least, you are aware of the ingredients and the potential side effects. So, enjoy. All right, here we are. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for coming on with us. We have three distinguished guests with us here today. First of all, John Rappaport. Thank you for coming back, John.
Thank you, Henrik. Always great to be here.
Thanks so much. We also have Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Thank you for being here, Sherry.
Absolutely. Good afternoon.
Thank you. It's good to have you back. And also Andreas Bachmeier. Thank you, Andreas, for coming on with us here.
Yeah, hello. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Excellent, excellent. And, well, I really would like to just kind of dive into some of the topics that we have in front of us here today. If you guys listening want to find out more about either of these guests, I do suggest you do take some time to listen to some of the previous shows that we've done as well with all of these guests. There are returning guests, so to speak. But I wanted to spend some time today on the Zika or Zika virus and also try to explain a bit to our audience why vaccinations, as they are used today, is a very, very dangerous affair, especially for young ones, of course, but also for teenagers, for example, as we saw with the HPV vaccine scare a few years ago, in terms of how they were debilitated and developed narcolepsy and all these strange, side effects of this, of course. But let's just kind of begin on the Zika virus and dive right into this and see what you guys have found here. I know, John, you've done a lot of research on this, and I guess I'm a bit late to this party. It's been going since, what, mid-January, if not even more. And this is the latest disease outbreak that they're pushing now. And it's said to target specifically pregnant women. And they've been trying to establish a link between this virus and microcephaly, which is when the child is actually born with a smaller head and a brain that isn't normal size. And I believe some woman in Slovenia more recently, who apparently worked as a volunteer in Brazil, where the main concern has been centered around, actually introduced it back into Europe, and then she decided to abort and all this stuff. So it's a huge thing of what has unfolded here. But give us the generalities, John, first, if you will, in terms of what you've found when it comes to the Zika or Zika virus.
Okay. So I've been at this since 1987. Meaning I've been researching phony epidemics. And so the first thing is Zika virus. Have they established a causal connection so that they can say the virus is causing microcephaly? And the answer to that is absolutely not. It isn't even close. It's not, it's as far away as some distant galaxy. Because the latest reports out of Brazil, which is supposedly the center of all of this, is they have confirmed 17 cases where there is, quote, some relationship to the Zika virus in cases of babies with microcephaly. 17. Now, this is actually counter evidence that proves that Zika has nothing to do with any of this. Because in any terms you want to define, if you're going to establish that a particular virus causes a particular condition, you have to be able, at a minimum, to show that it is present in the overwhelming majority of cases of that condition, if not all of them. I mean, that's the obvious standard, and that's just the beginning of what you have to show. You then have to go on to show that in those cases where the virus is present, it's present in huge quantities, not just a tiny little straggler or trace here or there, because that's when you can begin to say, okay, look, this person is harboring millions and millions of this particular kind of virus in his or her body, and therefore, yeah, it looks beginning to look like the virus is doing something bad. They haven't even gotten close to that. They haven't even probably tried to establish that there's any great quantity of Zika in the 17 cases in which it's confirmed. So this is a total fraud, scientific fraud. And the World Health Organization readily admits that they haven't established a causal connection, but they're relying on what they call strong suspicion, which is another way of saying, hey, we're doing propaganda. Listen to us and do what we say. Because that's all they have. And so, and they say, they repeat this, that we don't know that there's a causal connection yet, over and over and over again, you know, as a way of covering themselves. But, and I'll make this final point as my opening shot here. However, the propaganda has been unleashed. The genie is out of the bottle. They will never admit a fault. They will never try to put the genie back in the bottle once it's out. And it gives them the opportunity to say, we're discovering cases of Zika here and Zika there and a few here and one in Texas and another three in Mongolia and another one on the North Pole, et cetera, et cetera, as if the infection is spreading, right? Well, yeah, the infection is spreading for a virus that has not been proved to cause anything. In fact, the virus was discovered in 1947-48, and since then has only been linked to very mild transient illness that goes away on its own. And suddenly now it's supposed to be causing babies with small heads and brain damage. You know, they have no basis for this at all, but they can parlay this because they have certain mind control phrases, basically, that the public responds to, like infected, spread of the virus, new cases, you see. Whereas if they were to concentrate on microcephaly and start to really look at cases in different countries in the world, they would find out, yeah, it's been present. It's always present in varying degrees, depending on how you define it. You could say that there are 25,000 cases a year in the U.S., like clockwork. So what's the big deal in terms of something new, something dramatic and different, and so on and so forth? So we're looking at a level of extreme scientific fraud here. And the World Health Organization gets to play God in the situation because, once again, they're in charge of, quote, the epidemic. They can keep track. They can announce new cases. They can issue travel advisories if they want to. If and when a vaccine is developed, they can come in and demand that everybody takes the vaccine. They could do whatever they want to.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the opening shot here.
Well, you know, it's as usual, the media runs with these things. It runs with the headlines. It really spreads like wildfire, truly, in these times. And everyone is picking up what everyone is saying, and everyone will be first in reporting. No one is validating the sources anymore. What's going on? No deeper analysis. Just show an image with a guy in a hazmat suit spraying something, you know, and it looks terrifying enough. But I think people need to be aware of these, you know, previous outbreaks, right? That supposedly were to take out the, if not the entire population, at least parts of it, right? And from the swine flu to the even Ebola, well, I mean, what happened with that, right? It just dissipated. But I think the most important thing here, John, that you wrote about, I want to let the others come in a minute too, but I wanted you to explain that, because you wrote on your website about how a positive antibody test is done. I think it's called a PCR, right? I'm not sure what that stands for, if that is the polymerase chain reaction or something. But anyway.
There's two different tests, antibody, right, and PCR. There are other tests as well, but.
Okay.
Antibody test, without trying to go into a long song and dance about it, does not indicate anything except that a person has come into contact with a particular virus. Okay? Contact, that's all. At best, because the test is unreliable for a number of other reasons, but assuming it was done correctly and they got a true result, that's all it says. And in fact, prior to 1985, it was assumed that a positive antibody test for a virus was something good. The person's immune system reacted as it should and rejected the germ, and the person is healthy. But all of a sudden, the quote science was turned upside down, and it now became a negative based on nothing. Oh, it's dangerous. The person is either sick now or he's going to get sick very soon, and it's dangerous, and so on and so forth. The test has nothing to do with that at all, but it's been used. And, of course, using the test allows researchers and doctors and pharmaceutical companies and the whole medical cartel to invent, essentially, a whole lot of disease conditions that don't really exist, and to treat them with drugs and so on, and to proclaim these kinds of epidemics. The PCR test, which is very sophisticated and prone to many errors, is something entirely different. It takes what it hopes will be a small, genetic, tiny, invisible, almost piece of some virus, a tiny, tiny fragment, and amplifies it, blows it up like an enlarged photograph so that it can be observed. But among its many problems, the central one is that it never says anything reliable or accurate about how much virus of that virus is in the human body of whoever that tissue sample was extracted from.
Right.
And in the case of Brazil, for example, where they have done the PCR, and they say, oh, yeah, we found the Zika virus in the fluid of somebody's, you know, brain or whatever. It means nothing, because so what? I mean, you know, even if the virus were already linked to disease, which it isn't in this case, they don't have any idea of how much there is there. They can't say that using that test. So that's completely ridiculous as well. And yet these two tests are used side by side down the line to pump up falsely the threat, the danger, the epidemic, the number of cases, and so on and so forth.
Right, exactly. This was changed in 1985, I believe. So just if you had a little bit of, you know, positive antibody tests, then this was equal to you being sick, as opposed to your body basically just fighting with things, as it does all the time, pretty much. So yeah, that's very interesting. Sherry, what's some of the main concerns that you've come across when it comes to this latest virus and outbreak, if you will?
Well, I've written an article that was posted on Truth Kings a couple of days ago that, you know, there's several different elements of things that come into play. You know, the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, and rubella campaign that was started several months before these outbreaks started, the microcephaly started being reported, with the live rubella virus being injected into 39,000 women in that particular state of Brazil. They did a campaign of, because there had been a small measles outbreak, so they revaccinated a large population. 39,000 of those women were of childbearing age. And then they got pregnant within 4 to 6 months or so after being exposed to that. Now, the World Health Organization and the CDC say that you should only wait 1 month before you get pregnant with the MMR, but the package insert, and even Merck says, you know, wait at least 3 months because of the possibility of these three live viruses circulating in your system. And then after the women got pregnant, they started a pertussis campaign. And internationally, they still use the whole cell pertussis vaccine, which is they haven't used in the United States, I believe, since 1997 is where they really started working on it. But they haven't used the whole cell for a long time. I may be wrong on my dates, but the whole cell, and the reason they stopped using the whole cell pertussis vaccine here is because of the encephalopathy, the brain inflammation that it causes. And so when you look at the combination of a live rubella virus and congenital rubella syndrome, it includes microcephaly. Congenital rubella syndrome is deafness, blindness, and microcephaly. And so you've got these young women that were exposed to live rubella viruses. Then while they were pregnant, within the first, during their pregnancy, they were exposed to whole cell pertussis vaccines, which have never been studied in humans at all. In fact, the DPT vaccine that they are now recommending for all women in the United States, they recommended in the third trimester, is categorized as a pregnancy category C drug, which means it's never been tested on humans, and it has been shown to cause damage and cause problems in animals. But we are now using that routinely in pregnant women. So in my opinion, I think that we've got an iatrically induced problem, which means the problem was caused by these vaccines, that we have a fetus exposed to live rubella virus, then we have a fetus exposed to whole cell pertussis, and then you couple that in with the spraying of the glyphosate that they've been doing all over Brazil and couple that into the aerial sprays and in the water, it's a recipe for disaster. And I'm posting an article a little bit later this afternoon on TruthKings.com, which is a sister site that I have some association with. And TruthKings has gotten great reach. And the article is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but pointing out the obvious, that here was a problem that was caused by the vaccine industry. And so they implemented their proven recipe of the Hegelian principle, the problem, reaction, solution. Oh, my goodness, the problem is, oh, my goodness, we caused a problem. We can never blame a vaccine ever, ever, ever. We don't want to blame glyphosate and the combination of those things. It can't be. We've got a problem. So now we have to find something to blame. Oh, let's blame that little benign Zika virus over there that's been around since 1947 and has been studied, and it doesn't have any problems whatsoever. And we've got some vaccines in development, and the companies that were making dengue virus and working on yellow fever vaccines, they're sister viruses. Let's just use that. So now we can create the fear in everybody, because, of course, we want to protect pregnant women, right? And this is where the disaster is with pregnant women. So what we'll do is we'll just march over to Margaret Chan at the World Health Organization and get her to declare Zika as an international emergency. Now we can go to the coffers of all of the governments, the U.S. government, the German government, the Russian government. Putin even said he'd put money behind it. Let's get a whole bunch of billions of dollars so we put no money into R&D. We can develop this vaccine, and we can get the FDA to call it an emergency utilization authorization, which is an EUA, which means that once that happens, we don't even have to test it. We can say when it's close enough, it's good enough, we can start giving it. And because of the PREP Act here in the United States, at least, they have 100% liability protection against any faulty product that comes out in terms of a bioterrorism or an emergency vaccine, 100% protection, that even if that vaccine kills people, doesn't matter, they're protected thanks to their buddies in Congress. And we've got the Olympics coming up. We've got all these people right. wanting to go to Brazil. We can vaccinate all of those people. And it's going to be a windfall of profits for our shareholders, because we're going to make people sick with the vaccine, and then we can sell them a bunch of drugs to take care of their sickness. And we've seen this so many times. You know, we've, like you pointed out, you know, Hendrik, about saying we did SARS in 2002, bird flu in 2005, pandemic swine flu in 2009, Ebola last year. Now we got Zika. Shouldn't someone be saying something like, fool me once or twice or four times, shame on you, but fool me in 2016, shame on me.
Right. Well, I mean, there are probably millions, well, there are millions of viruses, other kind of illnesses, diseases that they could wheel out in this capacity and use against most people who are, well, frankly, I'd say confident to say that they're uneducated on a lot of these issues and, you know, what they are, if they're brand new, if they show up out of nowhere. So
last week, the Wall Street Journal even said, it was in the Wall Street Journal, quote, Zika's rapid spread could provide biopharma companies with a blockbuster opportunity. So the economy's kind of bad, stock market's going down. We need to create a disaster. We need to create some sort of epidemic so we can drive our stock back up.
Yeah, and you have the mosquitoes, of course, that, as you said, that spread the dengue fever. This was literally the same mosquito that now spread Zika as well. So there was a connection to that there. But Andreas, I want to switch over to you. Have you been keeping up with some of the news on this issue in Switzerland and Germany? Is it about the same there as it is in America and in Northern Europe?
Well, it's about the same, actually, but I think that most of the people don't believe it anymore. And you know, after the swine flu epidemic we had in was it 2009, I think?
Yeah, was it? Yeah, I can't remember anymore. There's so many of them.
Yeah. People, they don't think, well, all these new epidemics, they don't believe that because they think, well, it's another thing. The swine flu wasn't real, and now it's the Zika thing. And I don't think that nobody can convince them in any way that, well, maybe they need a vaccine or anything that can protect them. So I don't think it's a big thing here. Although the German health ministry, they issued a warning, a travel warning, that pregnant women shouldn't go to these countries where the Zika virus is around. But I don't think it's a big deal, actually.
Right. I wonder if there, you know, a crying wolf as well, that if and when there actually was something, well, let's assume, but if there actually was a real concern, that's another concern for us then, basically, because people would be so jaded and so, you know, burnt out on all these epidemics and outbreaks that actually wouldn't have manifested itself, that if something actually would happen, most people wouldn't believe it. So I guess that's the other side of that coin, Andreas.
Yeah, that's the other side of the coin. But I think it's only a distraction. So as Sherry said, that it's a distraction from the vaccine side effects. And, well, it's easier to blame the Zika virus than any vaccines, you know?
Right, exactly. Now, does anybody of you know if they've been talking about vaccines already? Is this already in the works? Is this what they're looking at?
They couldn't rush fast enough. They could not. I mean, Margaret Chan said on February the 1st, we're going to declare this as an international emergency. On February 2nd, Sanofi marched up to the table and said, we're launching a program. On the 3rd, Pfizer, Merck, Johnson & Johnson, Takeda, they all marched up and said so. On February 3rd, a big biotech company out of India said, hey, we got two vaccines about to go to animal trials. By February 8th, 12 groups had tossed their hat in the ring to develop a vaccine within 1 week.
Yeah, there you go. Interesting. All right, so what should people be aware of when it comes to the, you know, let's say they're watching the news, right? Because it's always this attitude. People get carried away with the headlines. They do get fearful, etc. I mean, whose responsibility is this? Is this the media's, or is it the CDC's or the World Health Organization? Who's accountable here?
Well,
nobody's accountable.
Right,
that's
right.
The problem.
I would put the World Health Organization at the head of the line because they feed the press.
Yep.
And the press are idiots. The reporters who write stories about vaccination, vaccines, about viruses, and I stress this over and over, and this includes, of course, the elite television anchors, they know personally absolutely zero about any of this. They know nothing, as in nothing. They earn their paychecks because they appear to know something. That's called acting. And that's what they do. So the World Health Organization starts this. I wrote a piece the other day about how they were down there in Brazil, one of the branches of the World Health Organization, which I call the virus hunters. They're always on the lookout for something new that they can pump up and so on. They were down there in May of 2015 in Brazil when supposedly the first sign of a Zika case emerged, a potential case, right? And they sniffed this out and they sent people down there. And ever since then, it's been building. Well, that's what they do. That's what the World Health Organization does. That's what the CDC does. The CDC has an outfit, which I call the medical CIA, which they call the Epidemic Intelligence Service. And these are several thousand doctors that have been trained since 1951 to respond to a CDC phone call in the middle of the night, pack a bag, and go anywhere in the world and look for a virus that's causing a potential outbreak. They have a report, three cases of something here or there, whatever. And as the CDC trumpets on their own website, graduates of this program have gone on to become surgeons general of the United States, editors and reporters for newspapers, professors at medical schools, pharmaceutical and health insurance executives, and so on and so forth. This is a club. This is a self-perpetuating, collaborating club. And this is what they do. They pump up these false scientific findings and lies, and they feed them to their brothers and sisters in the press, and those reporters dutifully publicize the whole thing. So between the CDC and the World Health Organization, you have a juggernaut of people in very important positions in this club, and that's what they do. And that's how the press goes crazy over this. Let me just point out one or two other quick things here. Brazil is the biggest user of pesticides in the world, of any country in the world. We're not just talking about Monsanto and Roundup, which is glyphosate, linked to cancer and other serious problems, including one controversial study on birth defects, but also many, many other pesticides like atrazine, which has been linked to birth defects. And now we have a report from a group in Argentina and Brazil. These are doctors. These happen to be doctors who actually care about what is making people sick, as opposed to the kinds of doctors that we're used to seeing. And they report that what they call a larvicide, and I'll try to pronounce this correctly, pyroproxyfen, has been introduced into the water supplies in the region of Brazil where the so-called microcephaly problem has developed. And this is an extremely toxic chemical, and it's supposed to kill the larvae of mosquitoes. Well, this was introduced in 2014, 2015, and it is one of those things, you know, like the vaccines that Sherry was talking about, that are coincidentally parallel in time to reports of microcephaly in Brazil. Now, pyroproxyfen is no little thing. This is a sheer poison, and people are drinking the water. And this has not been reported in mainstream press, just as the overwhelming use of pesticides in Brazil has not really been emphasized in the mainstream press. So what you're looking at here is people who must be protected from blame, prosecution, et cetera, meaning giant corporations with their pesticides, and a company in Japan who is a strategic partner of Monsanto that manufactures pyroproxyfen. These are the people that need to be protected, right? And so what do you do when you need to protect people? You invent a cover story that's going to resonate immediately with everybody, and that cover story happens to be the Zika virus. And that is a piece of mind control that's been used over and over again to hide the effect of vaccines, of pesticides, of poisons, like the larvicide that's been introduced into Brazil, and the corporations who manufacture them.
Well, you know, since also even just from an official standpoint, since, you know, glyphosate and all these things, more or less practically has been established that this stuff is safe, right? They need to find another correlation. And they, oh, what could it be? It's got to be this, got to be that. How was it? Because as Jerry said, it goes way back, this virus. And I think it was introduced in Brazil in 2013, if I remember correctly. It was some traveler, maybe from the West Indies or Polynesia or something, that allegedly. How do they know that, though? You know, but
no, but you see, here's the thing, Henrik. It was already there. It's everywhere.
Right.
This is a harmless virus discovered in 1947. How long has it been on the planet? I don't know. 50,000 years? I mean, it's traveled around the planet, you know, probably 5,000 times. It's everywhere. It causes nothing. It's harmless. But I can say, you see, if I'm the World Health Organization, I can say, I'm looking for it, and I found it over there. And there was somebody who traveled from this country to that, you know, that whole kind of the mapping of the spread. No,
right.
It's already there. You can find it wherever you want to look for it. So what?
Right, right. Yeah, it's a good point. Let's just, for a moment, go over the 101 here, though, of why people should not trust the World Health Organization or the CDC or similar kind of institutions. I think most of our listeners are aware enough and clever enough not to believe everything the establishment throws at them, because the proof in that is because they constantly go against our interests in so many different ways. But each one of you could just say something about that, of why they should have an innate suspicion, of why their interest does not necessarily represent ours. Sherry, what would you say?
Well, I would start with just with the U.S. FDA. I mean, the FDA, 40% of the USDA, of the FDA's budget, 40% of the FDA's budget is funded by the pharmaceutical industry. So if almost, you know, 40% of your business, Henrik, was funded by a particular industry, you probably aren't going to bite the hand that feeds you.
Right.
And
yep.
When you talk about, like, when the article that I read that came out from the World Health Organization that said that Dr. Margaret Chan sat down with 18 of her industry advisors. Now, it didn't list the advisors, but you can imagine who that might be. 18 of the industry advisors who all agreed that they needed to declare Zika virus to be an international emergency. And like to follow up on one of the things that John said about how long has this virus been around. I mean, suddenly we're hearing about, oh, like Zika's now traveling everywhere. It's spreading everywhere. Well, you can't find what you're not looking for. And if you weren't looking for that virus, you wouldn't even have noticed it because it causes
right.
no symptoms. 80% of people who contract the virus don't even have a symptom from it. So we have no background data on what was the incidence rate of Zika in any given country around the world. We have no background data on it. But now that you're testing for it, you can find it. And so the industry side insiders all get together, tell the general director, which is a military term as far as I know, a general director of the World Health Organization, that this has to be an international emergency because of pregnant women. Everybody gets all up in arms about that. And then now we have the FDA is going to fast track it, and 40% of their money comes from the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, that enough is enough to be a conspiracy, and not like conspiracy theory. That isn't a conspiracy, but by definition, a group of people who get together behind closed doors, make decisions that are going to impact your life, and then claim they never met. And so,
decisions made together.
So it's all the reasons why. I mean, those are the cliff notes of the reasons why nobody should pay attention to this.
Right. Andreas, what would you say?
Well, I think it's the same over here. So if you look at the, for example, the STIKO, that's the Standing Vaccine Commission in Germany. So most of the members there, they have ties to the
pharmacological industry or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and they are sitting, they are counselors to these companies. And, well, it's almost, if you look at all the members, you find one or two that haven't any ties, but most of them, they just sit and counsel all these companies. And that's why I can't believe anymore what they are telling you. If they recommend a new vaccine or vaccinations, then, I don't know, is that their opinion or is that the opinion of this company? So that's why it's very hard to trust these people anymore. And it doesn't matter whether they're sitting in these vaccine committees or whether they're sitting in the WHO, it's everywhere. It's the same.
Yep, exactly. Absolutely. Now, John, in terms of that kind of 101 distrust, what would you say in terms of that to people?
Well, I think I've outlined a lot of it already. These are PR agencies. You know, the CDC buys an enormous amount of vaccine every year. And yet, at the same time, they're doing studies to decide if a vaccine is safe and effective. I mean, you can't even wrap your head around that if you're looking for honesty. There's a built-in conflict of interest there. Are they going to say, well, gee, guys, you know, this tremendous load of vaccines that we just took off the truck, it turns out that we ran a study on this and it's unsafe and ineffective. You know, no, they're committed. They're totally committed. And as we've seen with the World Health Organization and the CDC, for example, in the swine flu hoax of 2009, the whole thing was just a melodrama that was cooked up based on absolutely nothing. It was an attempt to get people to take the vaccine, and droves of people stayed away. And those who did take the vaccine, unfortunately, some of them had, tragic effects. So we have a track record here, a history. I still write about this because it shows you what the media is really made of. In the fall of 2009, Cheryl Atkinson, who at the time was the investigative reporter for CBS News, before her computers were hacked, before she was shut down there, before she resigned, she found out that the CDC, in the summer of 2009, when the swine flu epidemic was supposed to be at its peak, had actually stopped counting cases of swine flu in America. Well, I mean, that's their primary job. They would do reports every week, and they had actually stopped, even though they were saying there were thousands upon thousands of swine flu cases in America. And so she looked into the matter further to find out why they stopped, and what she discovered was this. The overwhelming number of blood samples that were sent from diagnosed swine flu patients, or the most likely swine flu patients in America, blood samples taken from them, sent to labs, came back with absolutely no trace of swine flu or any other kind of flu. And she published this story. It was published on the CBS News website. And her editor told her, and I interviewed Cheryl about this, her editor told her that it was the most original story on swine flu that he had ever seen, and they proceeded to try to get it on the CBS Nightly News, which is a national and global broadcast, and all of a sudden the whole thing was shut down, and there was no way to open that door again. That was the end. Okay, we made a mistake, and we published this story once, and we exposed the entire scandal, but now we're pretending it never happened. 3 weeks later, and this is my piece, the CDC decides to double down and triple down and says, by their estimate, there have been 22 million cases of swine flu in America. 22 million. Now, this story was never picked up. The first part that I gave you of Cheryl and the second part I gave you from me was never picked up by any of the press anywhere.
Right.
It just was, you know, allowed to die. I mean, this was a gigantic scandal. This should have turned the CDC upside down. There should have been arrests, prosecutions, people sent to jail, et cetera, et cetera. It just shows you the way that major media operate at the behest of the CDC, the World Health Organization, and so on. They go along. They do not betray their partners here. And that's why in the press, mainstream press, these stories just die.
Yeah, they do, don't they? It's amazing how certain things are just picked up and spread like wildfire while other things aren't. I mean, we've talked about the Dr. William Thompson, John, last time, or a few shows ago, I guess it was now. But in terms of what happened there, the CDC whistleblower and him speaking out from the inside and having knowledge and all this stuff, and it's like, it got some mainstream circulation, but not that much at all. So, you know, these things occur all the time. You know, we have the right information there, but it just doesn't spread and it doesn't become the scandal that it should be.
And I would say, just to add on to what you were just saying there, I mean, just recently, within the last 3 weeks, there was a huge press release that went out. It was over 200 pages of documents and emails that we got through FOIA requests, Freedom of Information Act requests, through all over the world, and came out of New Zealand, and we showed it and sent it to the World Health Organization, that said that absolutely unequivocally they had lied about the data from the HPV vaccine. vaccine. They had lied to show that it wasn't proof, that it wasn't effective, and that it was causing harm. We had email correspondences that we had that showed that the industry insiders from Merck were actually coaching the people on the skeptics blogs in Australia on what to say to how to knock down the research that was coming out of Japan. We showed all of this and sent it out globally all over the world. Not a peep came of it.
Yep. Yeah, that is interesting. Now, I mean, a little bit later here, I wanted to get into the nitty-gritty of vaccines as well. That's actually one of the reasons why I initially brought you on. I wanted to do a vaccine roundtable. I wanted to let the audience know as well, and you guys here, that we tried. We looked for, what, like 2 or 3 weeks for somebody who would be able to, willing to come on the pro-vaccine side to actually have a debate. That was the initial kind of idea of what we had, and we just couldn't find anybody. We found like one organization and we didn't hear back from them, and you know, nothing came of it basically. But it was like, it's almost like that it's you know, you guys, independent researchers and people who are doctors and looking into this stuff and have their own opinion, and then it's almost like it's just the pharmaceutical companies and the reps that are out there to push this stuff, and no one was willing to stick their head out there, I guess, in terms of, you know, coming on this show and them standing for this issue that, yep, everyone needs vaccines, that's it. Anyway, so I just want to mention that. But so we'll talk about that a little bit later in terms of the vaccines issue and all that. But I wanted to spend a little bit of time on talking about Ebola, right? What happened with that? I mean, I forget how long ago it is now. I just did another search word here. And
2015.
Yeah, was it? Yeah. And I just see a story from the CDC here now, in terms of vaccines anyway, that they're having something they call the STRIVE. It's the Sierra Leone Trial to Introduce a Vaccine Against Ebola. This is a fairly, you know, recent story here. But this just died, right? This whole thing just dissipated, and something else came up, I guess.
And isn't it interesting that two parts to that, and I'll make a quick comment. One is, is there any Ebola in Sierra Leone that we need to be using them as a trial guinea pig for this vaccine? How will we know it's going to work? You know, are they going to be exposed to the virus? The second thing is that several years ago, the FDA got approval to have this thing approved. And John, maybe you can fill in the gap on this, that they call it, it's referred to as an animal end type, as an animal end stage typing, which means that if it looks as though the ant, you injected a vaccine that you wouldn't want to really test on people, like you wouldn't want to, you know, give people an Ebola vaccine and then expose them to Ebola to see whether or not it would work. But they can do that in animal trials. So by the animal endpoints, now, if they inject an Ebola vaccine into, say, macaw monkeys, and they expose it to Ebola viruses, and they don't contract the illness, then they consider that to be satisfactory enough in order to use it in humans. And they say that's good enough. That shows that it would work in humans. But does it? I mean, we've seen many times before, and that's one of the reasons why vaccines are so incredibly expensive to bring to market, is because through the animal testing, just because it creates an antibody, which an antibody is nothing more than a marker of contamination. It has nothing to do about being protective and keeping you from getting sick. And we've seen animals develop antibodies, but then in the real world, it doesn't do anything to keep them from getting sick. So this Ebola thing, you know, and there are several companies now that have Ebola vaccines that are ready to come to trial or come to market. As soon as we issue an EUA, an emergency utilization authorization, that they can go and do it, because the FDA says if it's safe enough, not that it's safe, but if it's safe enough, we can use it.
Hmm. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise when it's coming back. So
exactly. Now, I guess we could actually talk a little bit about the work that you guys are doing, and then take a short break, and then actually pick up and really dive deep into the deep end of the vaccination pool in the second segment there. But John, let's switch over to you first. And by the way, let us know if there's anything else you think we should know in terms of the Zika virus or any concerns there. But do make sure to mention your website and where people can go to read more about your work.
Okay, well, it's nomorefakenews.com. It's been there for, I don't know, I think 15 years now. I mean, there are many other things that we could say here. For example, there is now a project underway to do what's called gene editing, which is the latest and the greatest of the genetic technologies, people are saying, well, look, we have these mosquitoes, you see, and they carry dengue fever, and they carry Zika, and they carry another unpronounceable kind of virus that occurs in, say, South America and so on. So let's just wipe out that species altogether. We can do it because we can genetically engineer mosquitoes of that variety so that there will be no more generations of these mosquitoes. And I recently wrote about that, the flying vaccinators, in a sense, right?
Yeah.
Now, this is a very ominous technology because, you know, they're talking about wiping out a species.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get rid of it. And a couple of the researchers said in a mainstream article, 3 weeks ago, you know, we couldn't get arrested. And now, all of a sudden, with this technology that we have, we've got people knocking on our door saying, you know, this is a good I think we should do this in order to stop Zika, which causes nothing. So you could now have this incredible – there are many multiplying effects here, such as that. Well, if you can wipe out a species of mosquito by editing the genes of some genetically engineered mosquitoes in your lab, what other species do we find annoying that we would like to wipe out?
True.
You know,
yeah.
Where this is all going, right? And I have to tell you that now in Latin America, there is something called abortions at sea. At sea, ships, because in many of these countries, abortion is outlawed or can only occur in very restricted cases. So because women in Central and South America are panicking about this Zika virus, and if they're in early pregnancy, there is a group now that will take them out beyond the 3-mile limit into international waters, give them a drug, and abort their babies.
Hmm.
And then they come back, no babies. Right? And they know nothing, these women, except what they read in the newspapers and see on television. Right? And here are some, you know, a few other implications. Don't get pregnant for 2 years, 3 years. This
right,
is now
right.
the possibility of creating at the extreme, a missing generation. It's what I call depopulation by press conference. There is no science behind this. Just don't get pregnant. Don't travel to 22 countries if you're a woman because you might contract Zika, the virus that causes nothing. All of these things are now spinning off of the original conspiracy, as Sherry outlined, about the Zika virus, and I just want to underline one point that she made, which to me is incredibly important. How do you suddenly come up with the Zika virus in tests if you aren't already looking for it? You know, it isn't like you have a piece of tissue floating in some kind of fluid and you dip a net in and you look and you say, oh, there's the Zika virus. No, you know. These things are invisible. You know, you have to know what you want to look for, and that presupposes some sort of a prior plan that was put into effect. What virus do we have, boys, that we know causes nothing, and it's been around forever, and we can say we can detect it anywhere on the planet when we want to, and we can make maps of how it, quote, spreads and whatever, and somebody pipes up Zika. Oh, yeah, Zika, that's been around for a long time. Okay, let's go with that. Now we know what to look for. Now we can find it. Now we can claim it's a horrendous problem. Now we can get a vaccine developed and make you know, huge amounts of money, and et cetera, et cetera.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, it's an interesting point. And, you know, as I think you mentioned also, John, of course, you have Olympics coming up in Rio here now in summer 2016. And already we had some athletes speaking out that, well, I wouldn't go to Rio. I wouldn't play the game, et cetera. So, you know, it's a very efficient kind of marketing scheme and marketing campaign of how they're trying to sell this to us. And I think we should be very wary of this. You know, that's just the end of it, ladies and gentlemen, so that you can make your decision, you know, in terms of if you are, you know, willing to trust these people who continuously push these various kind of outbreaks and scares and diseases and viruses upon us that don't really go anywhere. So Anyway, Sherry, let's switch over to you for a moment and let us know if there's anything else you would like to add to the Zika virus, and also then tell us about your websites and where people can go to find your material.
Well, I think that what's going to happen with the Zika story for right now, it's going to start to wane. And through the wonders and the connectedness of the Internet, and that, you know, people really are sort of see it. I mean, even the pro-vaccine people that I've read some of their comments, they sort of say, what is this going on? But be wary, because I think as we get closer to the Olympics, I think we'll see a big uptick in this again. And like what John said, that Cheryl Atkinson uncovered, that they just fabricated this number. They just like flipped the coin and said, yeah, 22 million. That sounds like a good number. That's the one that we're going to report. That's what we'll actually have it to be. And so I think that it will wane, but I think that it will come back again. And so maybe that gives people a little bit of time to read and to understand kind of what this whole thing is about. You know, what I'm working on the side here, and I have several big projects, but the main thing is I'm working on a new book, and I'm about maybe half or a third the way through it. And the title of the book, the working title of the book is They're Coming After You Next, Adult Vaccine Mandates. Because as the Healthy People 2020 rolls on down the pike now, and everything is geared up to all of the guidelines of Healthy People 2020 that were meant to be just direction, and wouldn't it be nice if we could achieve these things? These guidelines have become goals and targets. And in February of 2015, they announced the adult vaccine mandates, because they kind of forgot about the adults. They were so focused on kids. And along with that, they introduced the guidelines in terms of the implementation plan. And since February of last year, there has been more and more published in the public health literature about the implementation and the enforcement arm of making sure that everyone, not only in the United States, but worldwide, is vaccinated. And I've spent hundreds of hours now over the last year researching this and looking at all of the Gavi projects and what they are doing in terms of third world countries, and their plan for 2020 and coupling it in with Agenda 2030 is to set up all of the surveillance programs through all the third world countries, ostensibly to be able to navigate drugs and mosquito nets and things like that. But really, it's to make sure that no one, not one single person on the planet, misses the opportunity to be vaccinated.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, share with us some of your websites. You have quite a few out there, so please go ahead, Sherry.
Well, I think, you know, drtenpenny.com is my main website that has been languishing a little bit in terms of new content. But the place where people can go to get daily news and update is truthkings.com. And the other one on vaccines is Vaxxter.com, V-A-X-X-T-E-R, which has really edgy, sharp vaccine articles on it. And so both of Vaxxter and Truth Kings are really pumping out a lot of really good information, and I hope that people will join us there, both on the websites and on their Facebook pages.
All right, very good. And Andreas, obviously I want to get more into your work in the next segment. You have a lot to share in terms of the studies you've made on children and all that stuff. We spoke about that last time, so let's make sure to go into that. But I do know that you have a new children's book out as well, so tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I published a new children's book because I wanted to give a book out for, you know, there are no books for children out there about vaccines. So you read a lot of books, or you have a lot of books, or children books, that talk about going to the doctor and that they are, don't have to be afraid of the syringe and so on. But actually, you don't find a critical book out there. And so I decided to publish a book. It's a book for 7 or 8 year olds who just start to read, or they can, or the parents can read it to the children. And the book is about just a girl who isn't vaccinated, but who wants to go to the the Girl Scout trip, and she wants to go camping, but she thinks, well, she can't go there because she isn't vaccinated. And it all settles around this story. It's just it's a nice story, and it's illustrated. And, you know, I published this book in 5 languages so far.
Okay, great. Yeah.
It's got a lot of heat, in Germany.
Yeah, I heard that exactly. I wanted to ask you a bit more in detail about that in the second, but I know you got a lot of flack for it, so yeah.
Yeah, because it wasn't even published yet, and I published it on Amazon, and even the first day was published, so nobody read it. And there were, I think, 30 reviews about the book.
So, yeah, there you go.
That'd be funny.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, well, just one star reviews, but still, they haven't read it. And I think the first week I had 40 reviews about it. And yeah, it's a topic. You can't say that you shouldn't vaccinate your kids, because that's not what the mainstream doctors are telling the kids or telling the parents. So it's something you're not allowed to say, and that's why they attacked me. And it's not that bad in the English speaking countries, but in Germany it was really. It was funny.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. They, some go very far on that. They see it as almost like a kind of child abuse, or that you in some roundabout way want to hurt children, right? for veering them off in a different direction. But anyway, we can talk more about that in the second too. I think the title is Sarah Doesn't Want to Be Vaccinated, right? Was that the correct title in English?
Yeah, that's the correct title.
All right, very good. And what's some of the websites for that, Andreas?
There is actually no website for it, so I just have my English website. This is vaccineinjury.info. And, well, I have a German website, which is impfschaden.info, but I don't have a website for the book, actually.
Okay, yeah, but your English one there, vaccineinjury.info, we'll make sure to link that up as well. All right, well, let's just kind of take a short break here, folks, and then we'll pick up in the second and really get into the nitty-gritty of vaccinations. So stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back.
second hour. Coming up, we will talk in more detail about vaccinations now. Both Sherry, John, and Andreas offers us the research that they've been doing over the course of many years and why you should definitely not miss the second hour if you care about your own health or the health of your child or children. We'll speak more about examples and cases where things have gone horribly wrong, deadly side effects, narcolepsy, neurological diseases, paralysis, and more. So if you want to catch the rest here, redicemembers.com is the website. Go there to sign up and tune in to the second hour. We do three shows a week, and this includes our Radio 314 shows, and we have a ton of shows for you in our archives. In recent years, we've spoken more about the immediate issues that affect us the most, topics that we can organize around and do something about, that we, in my opinion, must do something about. Okay, well, guests later in the week, Bob Whitaker and Tom Bowie. We have Daniel Carlson from the Danes Party. We have an hour with Gerald Celente, and many more coming on after this. We'll take a short break right here, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with Jerry Tenpenny, John Rappaport, and Andreas Bachmeier on the questions of vaccines. Stay tuned.